Hi, Blacklist fans. This is Michael Perry, writer of episode 613, Robert Vesco, number 9.
This is Sean Hennan, writer of episode 614, The Osterman Umbrella Company.
Hope you enjoyed the episode. You're now listening to The Blacklist Exposed
on Golden Spiral Media.
Let's get on with it, shall we? But first, we have to clear those kids. Welcome to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
Let's just call this episode The Saram List. I think that would be care of a lot of things.
Oh my God, I'm dead.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson, and it's good to be had. I like that, and I'm going to use that often in life.
And he was at the end of the episode.
He was. And I want to talk to you if you saw that coming or not saw that coming. We'll get there. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss numbers 9 and 6 on The Blacklist this week. Robert Vesco was written by Michael Perry and directed by Adam Weisinger. And The Osterman Umbrella Company was written by Sean Hennan and directed by Bill Rowe. Show notes and other intel for this episode for The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
I just want to say, for the record, like, let's not have anything called The Osterman Umbrella Company because I can't fit it on the album art anymore.
That's big. It reminds me of wasn't there like a the Osterman Weekend or something like that,
or the Umbrella Company? Oh wait, that's a different show.
No, there's a movie in the early 80s, Rutger Hauer. I thought it was the Osterman Weekend, but you know, people listening, you'll know. And if I had IMDb up, I could look real quick. But yeah, check that out. That was interesting. Anyway,
and he wants you to look it up because he can't see the IMDb page through the brain in his eyes.
That's true. I did cry like a grown man. Yep. No shame here, man. I don't cry often, but I cried at the end of these two episodes.
I cried at the end of both episodes, to be quite honest.
Really?
Yeah, when he popped the champagne, I was like, oh, he wants it back. So good.
Okay, yeah, that was very sweet. It was very sweet. It was like I'm saying, it's a Saram List.
There you go. All right, on this episode, we'll cover off on the Saram List, including the profiling question from last week, because the flash drive was not in play these two episodes. We'll also get your special agent intel after the episode, but we got a lot to talk about in our case profile. Remember, if you're enjoying the episode, head over to Patreon. That's Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. We have the panel from C2E2 up there, as well as something else coming. We'll tell you a little bit later in this episode.
I don't even know what that is, so I'm excited. I'm like, what? What are we getting? That's pretty cool. All right. Well, with that, let's see how you all answered last week's profiling question. You know what? Before we go on, we should talk about the C2E2 panel.
Sure. Why not?
We were in Chicago and we did host John Bokenkamp, Perry Lennox, Hisham Tawfiq, Amir Arison, and Clark Middleton. They were all there to talk about The Blacklist. I thought it was a great panel. Troy and I hosted it. It was, we got a lot of information. I almost really wish we were having it this week because this would have been interesting to talk about because we had zero indication. They didn't tip us off. We had no indication that Mojan was leaving. We had zero indication. And she has, in case you thought this was one of those things like I did, where she's obviously going to come back in 3 episodes, you know, and it's just like putting it off. It's going to be a big surprise or something. She actually did leave the show. It was confirmed by Deadline. It was confirmed by her. It was confirmed by John Bokenkamp. So she did leave the show.
Yeah, we had a 10% inkling that she wasn't going to be long for the season just because of leaving the tax force, but we just didn't know what her exit would be. So I'm actually really glad that she didn't die in the show, because I think having her die or be killed off would have been predictable, and it leaves not a lot of storyline for Amir with as the Aram character. Because if she's dead, he's like, oh, you just move on kind of thing. You have like the one episode and then you're back to normal. This, I think, gives the Aram character a little bit more runway to how does he interact with Red? How does he interact in his own personal life? Does he take more risks? Does he leave the task force to go find her? There's just so much story that you can do based on this decision. And I really respect that decision. I thought it was great.
Well, that she can also come back at the end of the series and reunite with him. You know what
exactly.
But back to what I was talking about with the panel. Amir does a great job of not tipping his hat to what was coming, and obviously he knew what was coming. So it was nice. I mean, everybody was great. It was a great discussion with everyone about their characters, the show. John kind of went into, you know, it is going to be 22 episodes for season 7, so everybody can put that to bed. A lot of interesting feedback. It was fun, and they are a wonderful group of people to get to know. So they are as genuinely nice and kind as they seem. And I'm pretty sure Harry Lennox is Harold Cooper.
No, for sure. It's one answer. I was like, oh my gosh. He's like, director of the FBI sitting right there. The one thing too, to put all the naysayers to bed, when they say that, oh, they're just kind of winging it week to week, they don't know what they're doing, they don't have an end in mind, they absolutely have an end in mind. He said it, James Spader said it on the Today Show that aired just before the Osterman Umbrella Company episode this week. So they have an end in mind, and the way they do it is they basically say, we're going to go from Chicago to Los Angeles, and we have to hit Denver along the way, maybe San Antonio, and then something else. But how we get to Denver, how we get to San Antonio, how we get to LA, that's where the magic of TV storytelling comes into play. But they definitely know they're going to Denver. They definitely know they're going to San Antonio. Right. They definitely know they're going to land in Los Angeles. So there will be a ending. We just don't know if it'll be on TV or if it'll be in a puppet show theater, as John likes to keep saying.
I would love to see the ending told in puppet form.
What if they did a, see this one, like they had in, I'm thinking like Fringe. Fringe had that whole,
of course Ellis, you do. You literally think in three shows, Fringe, Lost, and Alias. That's literally it.
Three posters on my wall. but they had this LSD episode where they did it all in like stylized anime cartoon. So it would be kind of fun. Maybe they do a whole episode of The Blacklist in puppets.
Like that old episode of Angel. Did you ever watch
Angel? Yes, exactly.
I would watch the hell out of that. All right, with that, let's see how you all answered last week's profiling question. Who will find the dossier, aka flash drive, first? The most popular answer was Red, or also known as Duh.
Number two was Other Party.
Number three was The Family Dog.
What happens if it swallows it? Then you have a whole episode of like waiting for it to poop.
Oh, yeah. Or this is The Blacklist. You might have to surgically remove it.
Okay. Before Peter
calls
us.
Which was a cat.
Number four, the task force will find it.
Number five, the rat from the prison. Yeah, whatever happened to him? What's a side story? Let's get a spinoff.
It was inside the cat that Dembe was holding.
Instead of Blacklist Redemption, it's The Blacklist Shawshank Redemption.
There you go. Oh my gosh.
Sorry. I'm actually kind of ashamed for even making that.
I just lost count. That's why I was waiting for you to keep talking. Number six is Katarina.
Seven, Dom.
Seven, Anna. Oh, seven was Dom. Sorry, eight was Anna. I can't count at all.
You can't. Nine was Agnes. I doubt she's going to find it because she doesn't. We don't even know where she's at.
Maybe that was her house.
Are we done with these yet? Oh, no, there's a couple more.
10, Dembe will find it.
And then Liz, because she has distanced herself from the task force.
Aram, because he discovers the Corsican saved the dossier to his cell phone, actually kept in evidence.
And lastly, what dossier are they looking?
Not this week.
Whew. All right, I'm winded. For next week's profiling question, we want to know, what illness do you think Red has?
Yeah, that was a fun one. Kind of came up out of nowhere. It was like, hey, I heard that name before somewhere. And yes, the pharmacist was the only thing that was not in the how did they do it rundown last week. So I'm glad to see the pharmacist came back into play.
Yeah, and I know we talked about it when he was originally on. So you have some details about that, right?
I do.
Sweet, because I don't.
All right, well, thanks to all that answered the profiling question this week. Now, before the heartbreak and sorrow take over, let's dig into this week's case profile.
Okay, now we're going to do this, because this was a two episodes, a twofer. So we're going to do this a little different. Now, I will make the statement, Troy, you agree or disagree. The first episode was pretty by the numbers. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't good. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. It was a fun kind of heisty episode. It was a treasure hunt. National Treasure 3. We finally got it. Only Spader took the lead. So we're going to kind of run through that one fairly quickly. I don't think there's a lot of mythology here. And did I miss something outside of the Samar and Aram thing, which we're going to kind of put together with their characters?
Yeah, I would say no mythology, but I did enjoy not only the treasure hunt aspect of it and the whole his bid for National Treasure 3, but I really love the party scene where you're going through the room. Oh, there's Hedda. No, there's and then there's. And it was kind of like an Easter egg hunt through the party to see how many of Red's associates were all coming back.
All the great standbys.
Yeah, it was great. It was fun. And Glenn's mom was by the bar waiting for Red.
And he looked terrified. Oh, no. Well, we get Stacy Keach as Robert Vasco, which was pretty fantastic because Stacy Keach is a long time. He's just a very talented actor. He's been around for a long time. And it's always fun to get one of these guys in one of these roles.
Which is funny that he comes up now because he was the warden on Prison Break.
Yes, that's true. Well, you went with Dots?
Exactly.
Stacey Keach. Do have a lot of Prison Break actors on here, don't they?
They do. And it'd be funny if Keach would have been the warden, and then Keach actually helps him get out of jail. And then you find out that they would have been, you know, the old mentor-mentee kind of thing. That would have been kind of interesting. But alas. Well,
and instead, he's playing Robert Fesco, who's a real character, like a real person in real life, which is funny. That was part of the panel, actually, at C2E2, where we talked to John about why would you use a real person, and he kind of spun off that it was just kind of fun, you know, when they JB Cooper, which one was it?
I'm trying to remember.
Cooper. Let's just go with Cooper. In a Cooper kind of way, you know, you have a guy who disappeared and maybe he's still around, maybe he's not. So it was just kind of fun to play with that. But he was a real character who was presumed dead. He allegedly died in Cuba. Reddington felt otherwise. Now, he got a line dropped to him in prison that he might still be alive. I felt at that moment that was painfully obvious that Vesco probably did that intentionally, you know, because he knows Red isn't. Everybody heard the news.
Since everybody was at the party to welcome him home.
Right. Well, no.
Because except for Vesco.
It was frontline news. So it made sense that he would want to get that out there because he needed a crew to pull this off and he needed the resources to pull this off. But he didn't have it because he was living, you know, like he was living. He spent all the money, squandered it. Sure. So he needed the help. To me, as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, it's a setup. The whole thing's a setup. But regardless, we'll get there. Reddington's mentor is this guy. Robert Vesco was his mentor when he was coming up, apparently. He duped Red. So the task force finds Anderson Mount, this random thug, is actually the body that was buried, or the one Dembe brought back, right?
Yeah, in the back of the plane. That's got to stink.
So now we go on they find Red, hunt him down. Red, of course, gets there first. They take him, and they go on a treasure hunt. Now, we're on a treasure hunt for the Dela Cruz treasure. This leads us to a poem, The Ballad of the Dela Cruz, is an opera singer's lament about a Spanish ship bringing silver and gold to the American colonies during the Revolution. It sank in 1778, and with it, the treasure. Moving on, Ernesto Hidalgo was a pirate who took the treasure and fled inland, and the Navy killed him in New Orleans. Judith Snell was an opera singer who fell in love with Hidalgo and hid everything, apparently in the opera house, which burned down and was rebuilt. And in their minds, the treasure is still there, still locked behind the concrete walls or whatever, hidden, and they need to have a diversion. So the treasure heist begins, and thanks to Glenn, Robert and Red find the treasure at the opera, apparently. They, you know, the whole time they didn't notice that this rebuild was going on. And then he dupes Red at the end, stealing the treasure and leaving Red with a little egg on his face. Actually, him and Dembe.
Which was a great twist, because I think at this point Red's not going to get duped a second time. So during the hug scene, you're focused on, did Red put a tracker over on him because he said he didn't want to turn him in, and then he's going to dupe him and turn him in anyway. And then here it was actually the reverse, where it was just a standard hug pickpocket. So good on the writers for kind of playing with the audience a little bit on that to make it think that, you know, Vesco was going to get picked up, but instead, oh, he's got duped again.
Well, don't you kind of like, I kind of wanted to smack old Red and at that second and go, come on, how did you not know he was not going to pull one over on you? This is a guy you obviously cannot trust. I realized he was all hyped up on the endorphins of the treasure hunt, but I think everybody in the audience knew that he was going to steal the gold, right?
I mean, there was probably a 50-50. I was 50-50. I'm like, okay, Red's going to get duped again. It'll be a funny story. Or Red's going to dupe him and get the payback and the revenge. And then I'm like, well, we always told Berlin that revenge was something you didn't want to do. So yes, he's going to get duped. I went back and forth the whole episode. So I was just pleasantly surprised. Yeah.
Did you go back and forth with the aspect that Vesco was going to steal it, though? Because I did not. I did go back and forth with, I really thought Red was aware he was going to try. And that when he made that call and said change of plans, it's because he knew that the guy was going to go after the gold earlier so that they were going to catch him in the eye.
I definitely thought that Vesco was going to one over Red. That was clear from get-go, from our minute one. But as it went along, it was like, who was going to dupe who? How was it going to end? That was where it was like 50-50 the whole way through the episode. Who was going to be the one at the end that got the one-up?
To me, the whole thing was, as soon as Red explained how he came to hear about Vesco, which I just talked about, where he heard about it, you know, he heard some, you know, people talking in prison. I'm like, oh, I get it. He's pulling a Raymond, where he's setting the whole thing up, and it'll play into his hands at the end. And at the end, you know, Red's going to get him. But He didn't. He got duped. Now, that was actually, it was a surprise because I really thought that he knew what was going on. But so what'd you think about Stacey Keach popping in?
It's great. Absolutely loved it. My favorite parts were during the heist sequence when he's got the entire Barbara Seville ballad in front of him. And he's like, two step, one, two, one, two, one, two. And he's like reading the play as they go through the, thought that was hysterical. It's just so funny. He's got the plans on the one side, and then he's got the entire Seville on the other side. Super fun. Super fun.
I thought this episode was really, really fun. It wasn't, because we do the podcast, we know we're kind of looking for stuff we're going to talk about in the episode. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this is one you can just sit back and enjoy. You don't have to think too hard. You don't have to worry too much about what's going on. You can actually just watch it and enjoy it. And there's not a whole lot that was dropped that is going to come back other than the Samar and Aram substory, which ended up that actually carried over both episodes, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, but it's great that they combined these two together. I thought that was a nice twist. If you had to wait till the next week, it would have been like, oh, it would just been so much more. I think the emotional weight would probably have been more traumatic if you had to wait the week for the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least it was kind of soft in the front end because you got their connection and they're like, oh, we're going to go to the cabin and whatever. And you kind of it was more lovey-dovey in that initial. So it was like, I think it made the moment hit harder because they put them together versus splitting them up.
We needed the play-by-play, too, because, you know, a week apart, I wouldn't have forgotten it, but it wouldn't have been fresh in my mind of what he told Levi, you know, which is very important. It would have felt kind of like, oh, man, you're dragging, isn't this the same story we told last week? You know, I mean, some of that stuff would have been kind of redundant or repetitive, or it would have left my memory, because it wasn't like a standout moment of the episode. It was just an interesting thing to happen, but putting them back to back, it was very present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I liked they built these two episodes together to give her a proper exit.
I love seeing Rudiger again. He was hysterical. Always a good time.
Vante
was back. So mm-hmm. I guess the only complaints I have with this episode,
Teddy. He's so funny.
The only complaint I have is no Smokey Putnam.
Yeah, that's true. Where's he at?
I don't know.
If I had a complaint, and I don't really think I do, it's more, I can't believe Red didn't see that coming. That kind of surprised me. But, you know, he's fresh back in the game. He's been in prison. He's been fighting. Yeah. The one thing I will say is in neither of these two episodes did anyone mention who turned him in or her, Liz, and the question. So neither one of those things came up in the two episodes. And actually, I would say Liz took a really big back door in both of these episodes. She's hardly present.
Until the end when she like completely laughed at Red for what you do.
That was funny.
Amazing.
That was so funny. Good. Yeah. So that was a fun episode. But a lot of the mythology happened in the following episode with the Umbrella Company, which is, we start with Singapore and we see how they pursue things. They killed this one woman and we come to find out that there's a target in the U.S. We don't know who it is. Now, Troy, you obviously assumed it was Samar right off the bat. I did not. What was your tip off? Just because you didn't know Michonne was leaving either, right? You had no idea. I had no idea.
Not leaving the show per se, but I figured not long for the season. So I had in the back of my mind that at some point there was going to be something traumatic. I mean, even Amir at the panel was like, oh, big episode's coming. And I worked really hard on this episode. So, you know, it's another something van related or a bear related of some kind. And I was just waiting for the first hour. And by the end of the first hour, when they're like, no, I can't be with you anymore. Yes, I want to be with you again. I'm like, next hour, she's dead. She's dead. Definitely going to be dead. It's going to be her. So when they had the whole targeting an agent and he's like, I guarantee you it is not an American. I'm like, oh, it's Samar. Definitely Samar. So I had it pegged from the beginning that she was going to die. So that's why I was pleasantly surprised at the end when she didn't die. That was a nice twist.
Right. So we basically have the task force going about trying to save Samar. She and Aram are trying to get out alive. There's a big debate between the two of them on if Aram will go with. You know, she's trying to say you have a life, and he's like, you are my life. Both statements, I think, are factually accurate. So they both have very solid points to the argument. And she understands what a life on the run is more than him. And obviously, we're looking at it from a character perspective, not an actor perspective. But she did ask, apparently, to leave the show last season. So they've been building to this moment, which I will give him a lot of credit because in Hollywood, man, this stuff always leaks. And I had no idea. Zip. And I follow the trades. I follow Deadline. I follow Variety, Hollywood Reporter, all those things. I've never seen any inkling to this. So I was, that's very impressive. To me, it's a very impressive thing that they pulled off to keep a prominent character on a show, actor on the show that left the show and it not get out. But there, that's where we are. So let's get into the characters. We've talked about the big overall arcs. Now let's get into the characters where we can really get to the meat of it.
Absolutely. And first up, as always, treated to a few selections from The Barber of Seville, as well as a great tune from Les Brown and his band of renown. To kick off Red's Welcome Back party, we hear a remastered version of Bruised Bones from Les and the band. Then as the old cons discuss their treasure hunt plan, we hear Steal of Fortune by Fuzzman Whammy Boy. To close up the first hour, as Aram woos Samar back over champagne, we hear In the Arms by Lucy Schwartz. Then in the second hour, Love Like There's No Tomorrow is heard from The War and Treaty, playing as Samar and Aram say goodbye, and it plays out all the way to the end and the last time we will ever see Mojan as Samar. Aww. As always, you can hear these songs and all the great songs on the Blacklist by visiting the Spotify playlist or the Apple Music playlist that we have those links over on the website at thelistexposed.com.
All right, we start with characters. We've got Teddy. He returns, and he loves the veranda. And I just want to mention this python that he uses to torture Mr. Hobbs. That is fantastic. I kind of want a Betsy. I think he called it Betsy. The dude is wrapped up by a python on set. That was legitimately a real freaking snake wrapped around that guy.
Couldn't believe it. I mean, the bees were one thing, but a real python choking a guy out. Oh, so good.
I honestly didn't think that was real. I figured, well, this has got to be some CGI. They really spent some money because it looks real. Looks better than Ka. So, but Hisham was on Twitter and he sent a picture of, you know, behind the scenes. Basically, he tweeted a picture. I'm like, oh my God, that's real. And then I got more terrified than I was when I watched it the first time. That to me is a horrifying, because that actor has a snake around him that, you know, you might think you can train a snake, but if you ever know Siegfried and Roy, you can't train wild animals, man, because when they're hungry, they just start snacking. And right there, that, you know, that snake was that. That's what's the old Chris Rock joke. That snake's going to go snake and he's just going to right there. I got a snack right in front of me, man. Why would I have to go somewhere else?
Wheel in those chinchillas into the room. It was like, hey, I smell chinchilla.
Mm-hmm. I'm hungry. And I got a chinchilla right here. So anyway, that was all I wanted to mention. It was nice to see him back, but the snake thing was fairly terrifying.
And they're always trying to get lunch. I want to see an episode where Red and Teddy actually get lunch.
that's going to be the highlight of your Blacklist season. Where are they snacking at? Where are they getting dinner at? Oh, what a nice place.
Oh my gosh.
All right, Vontae. Now we're doing characters like covering both episodes. So basically we're just taking it as one, like 1 2-hour episode. Vontae, he's really involved or wants to get involved with one of Red's wait staff.
Yeah, he was like, hey, can you introduce me to that that lady over there? And she's like, funny, she was asking about you too, Vontae.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, yeah, a little bit of love making inside of Red's ranks.
Safe to say that Vontae is officially part of the crew now?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He was there helping load up the truck at the end when they're loading up the gold. So it'd be interesting to see what more he plays, because it seemed like he was more of like a sidecar part versus like a Brimley or a Glenn or some of the people that have been around for a while. So love to see how Vontae's role expands in the future.
Yeah, I want to point out once again, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, Troy did an interview with him. So be sure to check that out.
Coy Stewart. Check it out.
Glenn.
He's always eating something when we see him. What is up with that?
I really love this episode. He loves shrimp. The ladies love his head. That was just a weird thing. It's just a weird scene. I thought I was in a David Lynch movie for a second. I'm like, what the is going on? But it was great. And then the best part was at, you know, after the halfway mark, whatever, Red and Vesco need a diversion. And his best course of action is, I'm going to run out on the stage and shout fire and clear the building out immediately. I just thought it was pretty great. I thought it was a great moment. What'd you think of Glenn this week?
Well, especially when he's in the mirror, he's like, time for your Broadway moment, baby.
Time for your Broadway debut. So fun. He's always fun to watch.
Glenn is such a good sport. I love Clark. Clark was so fun to hang out with at C2E2 too.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. Super nice guy. Dembe, he went to, and we should point out, Hisham has the best shoes of any actor on the show. In like real life, his dress is impeccable. Harry, pretty close. But Hisham, he's pretty modern day. Harry's very dressed up, and Hisham's very modern day. But his shoes, I wanted to steal.
And insider tip from the C2E2 weekend, Hisham's wife has a podcast of her own called Roots of the Spirit. So you should definitely check that out. She's a really good storyteller. I was roped in after the first episode. Really, really great voice, really great podcast. Check it out. Roots of the Spirit by Spirit Tough Week.
See, you can put these together. You can listen to both of them. The Blacklist Exposed and the Roots of the Spirit.
There you go.
Boom. I don't think they complement each other, but they're kind of connected. All right. Dembe went to Cuba to find a body, played bodyguard most of the episode, especially the first one. And I do kind of want to know, what do you think he was reading on the plane?
I have no idea. That's a really good question.
He was very into it. I mean, Red's having this very, very passionate back and forth with Vesco, and Dembe doesn't even lift up his eyes. He's just reading a book. So I'm going with like teachings. It just feels like a Buddhist or Muslim teachings, whichever.
Something like that. I think Dembe is reading up on the Dread Pirate Roberts. Like all the different character personas the Dread Pirate Roberts has had over the ages.
The Silk Road?
Yeah.
Thing?
The Silk Road thing.
Okay. Interesting. Hey, you went somewhere I wouldn't have expected. Or it's a book about the Princess Bride.
No, that's just a movie.
Yeah, but isn't that where the Dread Pirate Roberts comes from?
Technically, yes.
So there you go. It's all connected. Hits Red. There's a moment at the end where he hits Red. Because like I said, these two episodes, Dembe doesn't get a lot to play with. Hits Red. There's a moment where Dembe steps forward, and all I could think is, this is the episode where Dembe kills Aram. And I really legitimately believe that. And I know everybody's like, well, he would never do it. Did you watch the way he stepped into that? He almost beat the ever-loving piss out of Aram right there on that spot.
Which is funny because I thought it was really going to happen. Like almost like Dembe forgot or Hisham forgot he's Dembe.
Well, it would have been a fun twist too. I mean, you think about it, he's Red's protector and it doesn't matter. He might like him. He might not like him, but you don't touch him. You don't do it.
So do you think that answers the question that Hisham got at the C2E2 panel about where do his loyalties lie?
Yes, I do believe that answered it.
So, okay.
Red, always Red.
Always Red.
Always Red.
All right.
Harold, move on to Harold. He's just brazen anymore. He's just running around. He just doesn't care. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to threaten everybody I can find. I'm going to threaten the president. I'm going to threaten Langley. I don't care. But he reaches out to a contact at Langley named Lansky, I think was his name.
Yes, that's right.
Sets up a meeting with the Umbrella Company and finds this Mr. Hobbs. And of course, Mr. Hobbs says that there is no contract on a U.S. citizen. I'm an American right now because it's on Samar. And apparently Troy knew that. I'm too dumb. I didn't put two and two together. But there's no tokens on American operatives. And then what happens is later on in the episode, Red actually has to take Hobbs and obviously tortures him to get that information. But Harold gets a call from the ambassador that he was trying to negotiate with. And then the guy's saying, hey, you took Levi, give him back. And he's like, no. But he uses that for his advantage. I thought that was great because I thought he must have had him, but he didn't have him. And he's still willing. He's like, hey, maybe you can get him back, but that's a non-event.
Well, and the funny thing is that Mossad was actually lying, right? The ambassador was, Mossad can't help you. Mossad doesn't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And in this case, Cooper was probably actually telling the truth. Now, I don't know if he was involved at all or Red let him know that Red took Levi. But when he said the FBI has no involvement in this, he might have been telling the truth. Maybe he didn't know Levi was gone.
I don't think he knew that Red had him, but I think he was using it to his advantage.
Sure. Definitely.
That's what I got out of it, which I really liked that aspect. That's what really I thought was laughable.
It's like one of those things in your brain where you're like, Levi's gone? Ooh, how can I use that? Spin it this way.
Yeah, let's see if maybe I can get something out of it or just taunt this poor guy. And he did. And he did.
It was fun.
Yes, he did. Now we come to, this is actually kind of interesting because we come to Wrestler and Liz, and I will say that neither one of them really did a lot story-wise, but they have they each have pretty funny character moments, right? Or pretty interesting character
moments. Yeah, I felt like they were, you don't want to say comic relief in the sense that they were kind of throwaway, but they actually had some really fun comic capabilities in these episodes between the whole, like, carrying all the books over to the table. And then you had Megan, obviously, doing the laugh sequence at the end of the episode and taking the picture of them. I mean, sometimes you kind of need that lightheartedness. And I think the two of them working together doing the lighthearted comedy actually works really well for the show, to be quite
honest. Yeah, it was a nice balance. It was a nice balance. And I do want to say, Wrestler, at the very end of the second episode, where he walks up, he's in the post office, and Aram is just destroyed, and he walks up the stairs and sits down and just puts his hand on his shoulder. I know that's silly, you know, for us to get, like, emotional about that, but I was really impacted by that. That was just a brotherly moment I felt in the show, and it's exactly what friends do. We don't, especially guys, you know, we guys are really down. We don't want to have a long, drawn-out conversation about it, typically. We just want to sulk, and it's just nice to know that somebody is thinking of us. So that moment really spoke to me, because that's exactly what I would want someone to do if I was in his shoes.
Especially if you remember their relationship and the triangle between them.
Well, if you just make, you just made it weird.
Just saying, it's a nice moment knowing if you know the backstory between.
Because he's like putting his hand on his shoulder going, I know, I was there too. I get it.
For one night.
Yeah. She was my girl too, man. So I lost her too. I understand, you know, that kind of thing.
No, I
didn't mean it like that. I really felt like it was a very cool bonding moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was great, because I think people in the back of their mind are thinking, you know, in the sense of the whole triangle, and he slept with, you know, Samara at one point. I really feel like Diego did it in such a way that it played very well to showcase that it was a true bro moment. Like, I feel for you, I'm here for you. And just felt all the emotion in that scene. It was great.
Now Red. We've come to Red, because Samara and Aram are going to be the final two characters. James Spader is finally completed his audition for National Treasure 3.
And I would totally go see that movie.
I would, too. If he gets to play Red going after... Yeah, I would watch that. I would watch it. Assumptions, I think, especially in the second episode. Red is sick. Now, we talked about this a while back when Spalding Stark was first introduced, the pharmacist, and we debated, like, what could that mean? Does that mean that there is an illness? Because we have mentioned how he has character tics. He's always had character tics throughout the series, where his head kind of bobs a little bit in that early 90s George Clooney way. And it's become far less prominent lately. He doesn't do it as much as he used to, but it's still there here and there. But what they say throughout this episode, that Spalding Stark says the trials are in blind testing and almost done.
Yeah, almost ready for delivery. And then he actually does deliver at the episode, and Red takes one of those pills.
Correct.
Yes.
So Red is sick, is the assumption, right?
So that was the profiling question from the pharmacist. Why does Red need Spalding Stark? He needs it for himself. So those that said himself are the winners.
Now, go back and kind of just, you know, we talked about this at the top. Explain what Spalding Stark does.
Well, in the pharmacist episode specifically, he was looking for a cure for MCDD, which is the muscular thing that he was affected with himself. And so he was really looking for a cure for himself, but he's obviously well-renowned pharmacist, geneticist, whatever you want to call him, so he can obviously make cures for other things. We were postulating that it was more along the CRISPR angle and something for Kirk, kind of as a thank you and a payback. And then here we have Diaz showing back up, so Kirk seems to be top of mind. And then if you remember back to when Liz was reading Katarina's diary, and there was talking about you know, that Constantine had this illness and that it's passed along between Russian men and all this stuff. And I'm kind of like, oh, damn it. Is this where this actually falls apart, the Red Arena theory? Because he might be one of these Russian men because of the whole you know, cabbage soup and dressed herring, which is a very Russian meal. And then he talks about your country and all that other stuff. So here I'm thinking maybe this guy is actually a Russian male, and maybe he has some kind of illness along those lines. And that's why he needs the pharmacist now in order to solve that problem. But I hope that's not the case, because that would be a really bummer way for the Red Arena theory to go down. But
so what do you think he's making? Do you have an opinion?
I can't think of what, I mean, other than what we've seen in the show, right? Because we're only supposed to speculate what's on screen. So I wouldn't think he's got like a blood disorder. Maybe it's maybe because he was upset because of the head ticks and the bobs and stuff. Maybe it is a muscular issue of some kind. Because he was I got the spinach and I turned over a new leaf and he's drinking the green juice in the start of this episode. So clearly he's got some kind of health problem, that he healthier lifestyle. So maybe it's something along that nature, that it's, you know, muscular or maybe brain related potentially because of the whole focused on Samar's brain problems. Maybe he's got a brain issue too.
This is one where I don't have enough to really have a very formed opinion. I know you pay attention to minute details probably more than I do. So that's why I was kind of wondering if you had anything, but I wonder, he's got some kind of deteriorating condition of some sort.
Yes.
I don't believe it's cancer or anything of that ilk. I really believe it's something of his body, a breakdown of his physical being in some respect.
Yeah. Or maybe radiation related, something that ties back to Russia somehow, potentially.
Why's it got to tie back to Russia? Can't he just be sick?
Well, because he was with the first guy, Zamani, right? Mm-hmm. He was involved in the nuclear thing. And then it was Ruslan Denizov who was involved in a nuclear thing. And then there's the whole bombing with Lin in Russia and, you know, all the Cold War stuff. And it's just like, maybe there's some kind of radiation poisoning going on potentially.
Right. All right. So he makes a statement that her mother loved that photo. You know, the photo where her face is totally obscured and
it
looks like Masha on the swing represented everything she wanted and couldn't have. And then we kind of go in this explanation of the Osterman Umbrella Company, this go-to company for contract kills. So basically, foreign governments, including our own, actually just governments, contract the Osterman Umbrella Company to kill assets because so that way they're not killing, you know, not doing it internally. And he also implies that Katerina was a victim of a contract. She was a token, the way I understood it.
Yes.
Did you understand it that way?
That is exactly how I understood it.
Okay.
So those guys we saw at Cape May chasing her down were probably from the Osterman Umbrella Company.
Now, that brings me to the big point I want to make with Red. Okay. So there's a moment where he has Levi later on in the show. And he's torturing Levi. And I want to say, like, Spader just owned that. That whole scene was just dominated. I mean, I was in awe of what he was doing in that scene. I mean, what he does always, but just that's really, he terrified me a little bit as he's doing it. But he also just really invoked a lot of emotion because it felt like he was portraying a similarity to Aram, like an understanding, a reflection of his own past in a way. And I want to know if you kind of took it that way, because I'm watching that scene and he murders Levi in cold blood because of what he did to Samar, but especially how he destroyed Aram's life. So the whole time he's talking to Levi, he's talking about how it's going to destroy Aram. He's not really focused on the Samar aspect of it. I mean, he does mention it, but then he kind of really goes into this feeling of relatability to Aram and his plight and what he's going to go through, like how he's going to feel guilty. And I wonder, to me, just, you know, looking at it as a fan of the show, this comes across a little bit as though the reason why the Umbrella Company is number six and they're so prominent is because this happened to Katerina and he had to bear that guilt because of some mistake he made in the past. And that's why she, quote unquote, disappeared, died, whatever. And she basically went away on the similar circumstances that Samar did. You know what I mean? What of that? Do you agree with that? Do you see it a different way, et cetera?
No, the whole time he was talking to Levi, I'm saying, okay, this is completely coming back to foreshadowing and how, like you said, how Aram is going to feel because he's lived it himself. He has lived it himself. So at the same time, we're getting a glimpse into the past. So we're getting that mythology in this speech that he's giving Levi. So yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think if you go back and listen to that sequence a couple of times, you'll pick up on some nuggets that you'll probably want to mark down for future episodes, because there's some important context in that speech that he's giving Levi for sure.
Okay, so we're on the same page.
Definitely, yeah.
I really feel like that particular conversation gave more insight into the character of Red than we might think just looking at it as a scene. Like, I don't think it's so much about him defending Aram's honor as it is he takes this very personally because he went through this. Or at least that's the way Red came across in this episode.
Yeah, he either was directly involved or happened to him directly. But it was something from his past that he was channeling in that conversation for sure.
That was good. So, but overall,
bummer that Oded's gone. That's a bummer. Oded Fair plays a really great character.
I was actually kind of surprised because especially the Harold Cooper scene was right before that, which I really felt like maybe we're going to get some kind of bargaining for Samara's safety, which I guess wouldn't play with her leaving the show forever. But I really felt like we were going to get some play. But when he killed him, I was legitimately surprised. I did not think he would kill him.
And if you go back to the Kate May conversation, like, have you ever killed anybody? Yes, but only those that deserved it. So, since, I mean, Levi had to mess up pretty bad, and it had to strike a really big chord for Red to come out and pull out a gun and just kill him straight up.
Right, absolutely. I mean,
he's truly protecting Aram. Like, he's, like, doing this for Aram's sake.
Now, I do believe, like, I really believe he cares about Aram. I mean, that relationship has built over the years, and he does have a fondness and a trust and a respect for Aram. I mean, that's been 100% established. I'm not doubting that in any way, shape, or form.
That's why he took the punch.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that when we get to Aram, but it just really felt more personable, more relatable, more I understand where he's coming from, and you just destroyed this man because I was destroyed like this, in a way. That's mm-hmm. just how I took it. I want to ask you about the numbers, okay? So, Robert Vesco was number 9. The Umbrella Company was number 6. These are top 10 blacklisters, both in this two hour thing. Do you feel like they felt top 10?
6, I did. 9, not so much.
Explain.
Well, I mean, the episode was it was fun. Red's out of jail. We're having the party. It's all good. We're going on a treasure hunt. It's like, yeah, this is fun. But there wasn't like mythology related stuff, I think, in Robert Vesco's episode. So because there's no mythology, I don't think I put it in the, like you said, top 20 or more. I feel is like mythology people. So I probably would have put it more like maybe a 30 or a 40. I mean, he's important to Red's life, but he's not connected to Liz in any way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe number 9 was a little bit high for Vesco, but I could buy 6 for the Osterman Umbrella Company. I think that's a pretty good thing. It's like a B613 kind of candle. So, yeah, I think that the number 6 feels right for that, especially with the emotional weight of the episode with Samar leaving the show, or Mojan leaving the show playing Samar.
Yeah, number 6 works for me, and I do feel there's a connection to Red, too, so that's connected. That's one of those, like, stops to Denver, whatever the hell you were talking about, or right. John was talking about. Yeah, to me, this feels like it was something that was always going to come up, but it's just, you know, hadn't come up yet. Now it's there, and now we kind of have another piece to the puzzle of why she's no longer, why she disappeared, why she walked into the ocean or whatever. So that's what I got. Now, number 9, I'm with you. I mean, it's hard to say it's not worthy of the top 10 because we haven't gotten to the end game. It's just our assumption of what the blacklist is. But I've said for a long time, I believe this is what's most important to Red at that moment. And I guess I get finding Robert Vesco is important to him, but I don't know. It didn't have the punch. It didn't have a Rom's punch to make me say this is a top 10. Damn. You know, but I get why it's important to Red.
Well, considering that Dembe was number 10, right?
Yeah.
Like Dembe should have been a little bit higher than Vesco.
But he didn't really do anything.
No. Just assumed he'd be poisoned.
It's unfair that he was even on the blacklist. He should be bumped to the... They should reallocate his number because he didn't do anything. Give him a break.
So how does that leave now? That leaves 1, 2, 3, 5?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I'm pretty sure 1, 2, and 3 we're not going to get until the final season.
Right. So that should be the profiling question. Who's number 5? Osterman Umbrella Company is 6. 5 has got to be related to Katarina because they're kind of bookending it there.
We don't know. We don't know how many years we're going to go. Spader was on today's show and he's talking about season 8.
Season 12. You're like,
what's that?
Season 12. He's like, it could go on forever.
He likes that cash, man. That's good money.
He does.
Yeah.
I'd watch a show with just the character of Red, like doing like heist treasure stuff. Like, I think it'd be a fun show every week.
I do say, I mean, it should go over 8. I think 8 seasons is, 7 seasons is, to me, is like a perfect run of a show. There's not many that have gone to 8, 9, 10, 11 that I think gotten 15, better.
15, like Supernatural.
But people still love that show. So, I mean, it must still be doing something. But I always respect when actors are willing to stick around. I'm not, this isn't a dig on Mahjong. I mean, if you want to try different things, I totally understand. But especially the leads, you know, the people you come, the main people you watch every week, like Spader and Megan, those two, the leads. I always respect when actors are willing to stick around for a long period of time. That's not easy to do because once the show becomes popular, they get a lot of other opportunities. So it's nice to, you know what? I like this here. I like, because I always felt like if I'm an actor and I got that kind of success, I want to ride it out, right? I mean, that's like the biggest check. You never, acting is so up and down. You never know if you're going to get another hit. So when they ride it to the end, I always respect that.
Yeah, but I definitely feel that the Blacklist itself is the mythology. So when the mythology is answered, the show, the Blacklist, is over. But I would not be opposed to having a spinoff show of just Red doing stuff.
Just Red doing random crimes?
Yeah.
I would watch that.
I totally would watch that.
I mean, he kind of does that now, though. So really, what's the difference? You just don't have the mythology if you did a spinoff, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. Make it a true procedural case of the week kind of show.
All right, let's get into the final two. And we're going to do Samar first because Aram is going to be back next week. So we have more to speak about in that respect. Samar, a.k.a. Skylark. That was nice. We found that. We find out her diagnosis is vascular dementia, which will not get better. It will only decrease. And because she is trying to leave the Mossad as well, she's basically retiring from the task force. She's retiring from the Mossad. They think she's hiding something else. Levi is sent to interrogate her. She has to do a lie detector test. He ends up saying that she's pregnant when she's not pregnant. So they notice that something's wrong. And then they go to Aram and they learn the truth.
Well, they know that. But you as the audience, did you think she didn't?
No.
No?
No, to me, that was the lie. I got that 100% just in her demeanor. She didn't want to say what she had. And I figured that actually is exactly what I thought was the problem. She doesn't want to tell them that she's decreasing her faculties mentally because then they might kill her because she would divulge secrets.
Well, and what I really loved is that they played with the audience a little bit in the directing and the camera shot for that reveal, because you could have bought the fact that she was pregnant because it looked like her hand like jiggled a little bit. And I don't know if she was doing that on purpose to spoof the lie detector test. Like if she moved a finger just enough that it wouldn't show as much of a blip as a lie. And so because she did that, I thought maybe it was a truth. And I was like, oh, that might be kind of nice if she's pregnant. I didn't buy into it completely 100%, but I'm like, I kind of went with it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to ride with the story out and see where this goes. Because what if she is pregnant at the end of the day? Because Aram was talking about, like, we can't have kids until we talk about getting you better and blah, 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 blah. And so it'd be a nice twist for the episode. So I went for the ride. I did.
Now, the first hour, did you think there was any chance that they were going to break up?
Any chance they were going to break up?
Yeah, because at the end, it was kind of,
I didn't think they were going to break up. I thought they would part ways for safety or for... She had to go get testing done or something, but he has to keep his job. So it would have been more of a long distance relationship thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to split up. No.
I'm just
not in the
first
hour. Second hour, I was like, oh yeah, she's definitely dead. Like I told my wife right before we started the episode, I'm like, if Samar doesn't die at the end of this episode, I'm going to be pissed. Because they built it up to the point where she's going to die. So she's going to die in this next episode.
You wanted her to die? Is that what you're saying? Or are you just because you expected it?
I expected it. Yeah, it's TV troping up to this point. You're like, oh, they're going to go up. No, no, they're back together. And just when they come back together, you're going to rip them apart again. So the whole concept of it being the fact that this was an assassin group that was coming from what we saw from the clip at C2E2, put it in the back of my head that, oh, okay, this assassin company is coming to kill Samar.
So. Well, she decides to not have kids, and which really looks like it came from him, but she doesn't do it, and they ultimately come back together because he wants his world to include her. And if that means no kids, that means no kids. I guess I love this moment because personally, I always have a hard time with understanding why people find it odd that some people don't want children. Like, it's not for everybody. And she's actually making a very mature decision to not have children simply because of her mental capacity. She doesn't want to have to struggle. It's already going to be a struggle for her to take care of herself, let alone children. You know, it's just one of those things where I've seen so many relationships break up over this, over the kid thing. It's a really impactful moment. And I really loved how Aram handled it. Like, if you love her, it shouldn't matter whether you have little people or not. If that's in the cards, great. If it's not in the cards, great. I mean, you don't even know. Maybe you couldn't even have them. Maybe, you know, things that can go wrong along the way. So you never know. And if you really love them and you think they're the one for you, or they're your soulmate or whatever, I don't understand. Some people have a natural obsession with, I got to have kids and I can't be with someone that doesn't want kids. I respected how she handled it. She handled it very maturely. She actually changed where she was, her stance from where she originally didn't want kids to she did want kids to I can't have because I can't risk being this kind of parent. The whole arc, I really loved that. And the moment when she has that discussion with him was a really a big highlight for me. How about you? I know it just sounds weird, but to me, that's a big thing. I've got a lot of friends that broke up over this.
Well, and it's true to the character too, because there was the whole when Liz went and like, hey, come to my baby shower. And she's like, no, I'm not coming to your baby shower and blah, 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 blah. And I think that the moment here is just a testament to, you know, anybody watching the show that's, you know, in their early stages of life that are interested in maybe getting married someday, that these are conversations you have to have before you tie the knot, because you can't be in a marriage and then find out that the other person doesn't want to have kids. It just doesn't work. I mean, you can grow to that point maybe within a marriage and come that way, but you need to know full stop before coming into it if they want to have kids or not, because if that's something that's important to you, they're never going to make you whole, because they're always going to be a piece missing. So I'm trying to look at my character in this sequence and go, is he really buying into the fact that she is his whole life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that in this regard, that I don't think Aram ever really thought about kids. He wasn't even thinking about kids. He wanted to say, we can't have kids until you get better. Like, we can't continue our relationship till you get better. And so when the whole pregnancy thing comes up, it's like, that's when he lights up and it's like, oh, I'm going to be a dad. This is going to be awesome and everything. But he's like, no, I was resigned to not having kids before. So no, I'm okay. So I think the character moments were true to form. And I think it played out very well in the show.
Yeah, it's a beautiful moment. Then we get to the second hour.
Oh my gosh.
Where I'm surprised and you're not. I shame on me. I usually see this stuff coming, but I didn't realize she was going to be the target. I thought something was going to go wrong.
It was telegraphed. So I was like, my wife picked up on it. I'm like, if Aaron doesn't pick up on this, oh my gosh, we're going to live it down.
I didn't. But part of that might be my reluctance to see anything happen to her, because I didn't want her to die and I didn't want her to leave the show. I didn't want any of these things. So to me, like, nothing's going to happen to her. She's going to be fine. She's going to at least be around till the end of the season. You know, that's usually a last ditch effort of the season. It's like, oh, we killed the main character at the end of the season. You know, that's usually when that happens, not mid season. That was, well, except for Tom, but
this, what was the end of the fall finale? So it's the end of a season in a way,
right? This is, to me, watching the way that they're doing it, this is kind of like mid season. So,
I would say this is the second part B opener versus the part A ender.
Now, how did you like how they handled her decisions here? Because she essentially goes the opposite way of what we expected, right? You expected her to die. I assumed if she's going to leave the show, she's going to die. I did not expect that she would just board a plane and they would use this for future story. No, I can't. You kind of talked about it at the beginning. But since you were kind of expecting her to die, were you disappointed in any way that they didn't just kill the character off, because that means she's still out there?
No, not at all. I think this was a really great way to subvert expectations. My other kind of thought in the back of my head was she joins up with Mossad and then she goes with Mossad because she has to go on some secret mission or something. And that's why they have to part ways. Something about that was going to get her off the show. Some way she was leaving the show in this episode is what I had in the back of my mind. After the first hour, I'm like, yep, she's definitely done at the end of the second hour. So when it's the, you know, I put her on a plane, she's gone, Red took care of it. I'm like, oh man, that is like A, super cool because you like did that to your friend, but B, super at the same time because you did that to your friend. I could see where Red struggled with maybe making that decision, which I think was a really great part of the final part of the second hour. So I think that because she didn't die, I was pleasantly surprised with how it turned out. And because of that, I was able to enjoy that moment that much more.
My favorite moment of hers for the entire 2 hours, honestly, is, I mean, the phone call, we'll talk about the phone call after we talk about Aram. So that's coming up. Don't worry. But the moment where she, Rom tells her, look, that was me. I'm so sorry. You know, I thought I was protecting you. That was me. It's my fault. And she makes a statement that as a father of, as a son of a strong, independent woman and a father of a strong, independent woman, it was just one of those things that just made me smile from ear to ear, where she says, you thought you were protecting me. I get it. But you forget that I can always take care of myself. I just love that because it's 100% true. Stop trying to protect her. Let her take charge of her own life because she's proven time and time again, she don't need your ass. She can get it done. And I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. Yeah, I smiled the whole time. I'm like, it's a great line, man. Great. Put it on a poster or something.
Takes out that music. Give me my damn bag right now.
Just love it. All right. So we're going to come back to the phone call in a second. Let's go to Rom. The champagne waited for 30 years. That's a weird gift, right? Hey, here you go. Pop this when you have that baby. Thanks, Mom and Dad. That's putting a lot of pressure on a kid.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's in the culture or something. It's something that's a thing that happens.
But then he just pops it at the dinner table. I mean, it wasn't even like a big dinner.
It looked like she was having like burger and fries or something.
Yeah, I actually thought Levi was going to come over. I'm like, oh, it's going to get real.
That would have been a good twist.
Because she's like, how did you find me? And I'm like, oh, don't do that. Don't break his heart. Thank God they didn't do it. Thank God.
I'm not pregnant, so I'm leaving you. And oh, hey, there's Levi. Hello.
You know, he understands my life. You know what I mean? But no, they didn't. They didn't do that. And I'm glad they didn't because that would have been ridiculous. Yeah. But turns out the world could literally end without him. That was a sweet moment. Mm-hmm. And I do want to point out, he has a moment where he says, you cannot force me to live without you, which I thought was beautiful. Talk about how you felt Rom was handled in this particular.
I thought it was great in this particular sequence because I felt the proposal in the coma, it was the contrived TV trope kind of. So mm-hmm. This felt like a true proposal to me. Like this was the moment that they really got engaged and where they really devoted their lives to each other. So I think, Amir played it really, really well. I think that just the emotion and the longing in their eye and everything, the shots, the framing, the lighting, the music, everything was just like, oh my gosh, like this could literally be like an episode like You Got Mail or Sleepless in Seattle or one of those like good old romantic movies. You could totally see it happening. So I thought it was great. I think over the course of the 2 hours in totality, you know, Rom does the Rom thing. He's great, you know, from a task force perspective. He's great with Samar. And then just the pure emotion in the final sequence between the phone call and with Red. And it's just like, man, I can understand when Amir said he worked his ass off on this episode. I mean, the amount of emotion he has to channel from hanging up the phone to the right hook. Mm-hmm. Just so powerful. Cause I felt like that actually landed on his face. I really did. I mean, it really looked really good job from the stunt coordinator team to make it look like it really landed on Spader's face.
Yeah. And Spader even, he does a very good job of acting like, ow.
Yeah.
But also keeping that resolve like, okay, we're just going to let it go. I'm not going to kill you today. Don't do it again.
Which is a great character moment because it shows the respect that he has for Aram, right? Because of the whole, like, you know, if you wouldn't have stepped up for Liz, I'd be looking over another grave and all this other stuff. And just the him coming to the house in the Artex network right after Cape May. I mean, just their relationship over the years has been very awesome. All the way back from the find the bank number, I'm going to, before I put this gun back together and I shoot you. It really shows the breadth of these characters and how their relationships have developed. And I think that but at the end of the day, regardless of what you think of TV in general, as far as storyline, good television shows have great character moments. And this, I think, is one of those character moments between Red and Aram that'll really cement the show as one of those in history that you can say, yeah, this was a great show on television.
Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. That whole last 10 minutes, I watched several times just because it was so impactful and so heartbreaking.
That's because you didn't see it the first time because you were like... And the second time, it was all rain in your eyes still. And then the third time you had it. Oh, I can finally see it now.
Dude, I bawled. I absolutely bawled. I'm not going to lie. Because when it was over, I'm thinking, well, I mean, she'll be back in a few episodes so I can collect my tears. You know, And I can't say this enough, man. I don't cry at TV shows. To me, it's just entertainment. You know, I enjoy it. Da 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 da. Very, very rarely do things make me do impact me so often that I will actually cry. I don't cry much as a regular person. Few things. 12 Years a Slave, Titanic. Those are a couple things that I will cry in. But TV shows rarely hit me there, just because so many of the moves are telegraphed. You know. You kind of see most of what's coming, especially if you watch as much TV as Troy and I do. But that got me. The performances from actually all three. I'll throw Spader in there as well, because, I mean, how he kind of got me amped up because of that whole scene with Levi and got really the emotions welling. And then you had that phone call was just absolutely brutal. Both Moshan and Amir were phenomenal in those moments. That phone call, I cried the first time through the entire phone call, where I missed lines. And especially when he's, who will protect you if it's not me? That line, gah! Bald, like just pathetic.
Yep. You had to get a mop at my house to clean up the floor. Yeah.
It was delivered. Both of them delivered. It felt like it was real. And it's so hard to do when you watch so much TV, because all those moments, they don't feel as real, but those two together always have felt real. And especially, they haven't had a lot to do this season, so we've been waiting for something really big with the two characters, and this was something really, really big, and it really paid off. And the phone call, I mean, you could hear a pin drop in my house. I was really, I came to the end of it and kind of disappointed in a way, because Mojan did such a great job. Amir has done this over and over. Like he's got the beats down. He's very talented at playing a role where he's both genuine and humorous and warm, right? He's got that down. He's got it locked. We've seen it a lot. We haven't seen it as much from Mojan because her character is very stoic and kind of just very ass kicking and doesn't really get those emotional impactful moments that often. And here she gets a long one and it was heartbreaking, man. She was fantastic. I'm like, nah, get away. You're moving on other stuff, man. There's other stuff you could be doing. You're great. I was kind of disappointed in a way, cause I wanted more of that, like in her previous episodes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, probably the closest thing that comes to this would be Zal Ben Hassan. You know, when she finds out about her brother, you know, it's probably the closest she's come to a vulnerability state, I think is what we'll call it. And just seeing the vulnerability and the humanness in her, that I think it's a shame that we didn't see. I get why we didn't see it on the show, because the character on the show, she's massage, she's FBI, I'm about the job. And, you know, it would be against character if she had these vulnerable moments. But the fact that you get to see these vulnerable moments in her character just make you, like you said, like really disappointed that she's no longer on the show, because more of these moments, I think, would have been great for the Blacklist, you know, long term. But unfortunately, it's not meant to be as of right now. You never say never, right? She could always come back for something.
Absolutely.
She could end up being a Blacklister somewhere down the line. She goes against Red's wishes and tries to come out of hiding.
I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want that. I kind of got overwhelmed again, overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah,
so anything more you want to say about the phone call with those two? And I can't believe like it's a 3-minute scene, something like that.
And it felt like 20.
It did. Yeah, it really did. It was so well constructed and well done. And her decision to just move past it.
Oh, was and then just the beautiful. And then the airplane, and then the pull the shade down on the window. I'm like, oh. Heartbreaking.
Who will protect you if it's not me?
Oh, don't say it again. Keep tearing up every time you say it.
All right. And then he punches Raymond Reddington.
Awesome.
And we already talked about. And tells him, I will never forgive you for this. And love that Turner. You know, he goes from this emotional, just gooey, just laying on the floor, bawling, straight up clocking Raymond Reddington, a guy he knows could have him killed in seconds, and tells him, like, I mean, his best Clint Eastwood. I will never forgive you for this.
I was literally screaming at the TV. I'm like, the minute he hung up that phone, I was like, hit that mother effer.
Were you really? It's not his fault.
I was like, I felt every single emotional thing that Aram was feeling in that moment. And that's the first thing that came into my mind. I am turning around and decking that man in the face for taking my lover away from me.
Were you surprised by it? Because I was totally surprised by that.
I was surprised that he actually did it. I mean, I understand and I love the fact that they wrote it in. I love the fact that Bill Rowe directed it the way he did. It was exactly the right thing to do in that moment, because that's exactly what I would have done.
Yeah, it's, this was a very impactful, like, it's so funny that the last 10 minutes overshadowed everything that came before the 2 hours. There's a lot of great TV in there, but I'm just like, those are the moments where like just resonated with me so much. It was just so well done by all three of those players. All right, so two big questions. One, will we ever see Samara again? What do you think?
I mean, given the fact that Mojang put the tweet out for their Instagram post and all that stuff, I would say no, but I think it'd be great to have her come back at least for the finale. The finale, not the series finale. Or I'm sorry, not the season finale, but the series finale. There you go.
I believe that's the only time we would see her again as a series finale. Reunited with Haram, and the contract is done. They bring down the Osterman Umbrella Company, and so she's safe.
Yeah, because and technically they're still operating, actually, right? We never closed the book on the Umbrella Company themselves.
Yeah, it's still going. I mean, you'd have to find out who's in charge of it first, which we didn't get any indication of that whatsoever. We really didn't get too far into the actual Umbrella Company, which that was a surprise. Because you would think if it was number six, we would get a little bit more information on the company itself. We didn't get much.
Well, I don't think it is a thing. I don't think it's a company. I think it's an unwritten contract between agencies, between Mossad, between MI6, between CIA. Like, it's just a known thing that if you need to take out your own agents, that this is who you hire.
Well, we don't know yet. We'll have to find that out later.
Yeah.
Can they come back to the same number? I don't know if I don't think we've ever done that, but
well, I guess we
did. Could they come back and do another? Well, they did Conclusion, right? Yeah, Bastion Morel.
Well, we did with the Corsican, right? Because it was 20 at the start of the season, and then we did three episodes on 20.
Okay, so we can do it. Okay, so we can come back to this, which I assume we will, since they seem tied to Katarina in a way.
And we've come back to previous story arcs from previous Blacklisters, because we had General Ludd with the blueprints of the money and stuff, and then we see that come back around in season 3. So maybe they're tied back that way.
All right, now what will Aram do now? Could he go against Reddington? Could he be a big bad? I know they're leaning that way. They're painting that picture that he could go against Reddington. Do you really believe he would be a formidable opponent to Raymond Reddington?
No, not a formidable opponent. He could try. He can do everything he can that he wants to do, but not that he's going to be a formidable opponent to actually put a damage like a Kaplan did to Red.
Would you want that either?
No, I think that, I mean, I would rather see them, you know, be at odds for maybe 20 minutes of an episode, and then you get to the end and then you have some really good exposition from Raymond to Aram about why he's feeling the way he has. You get a little bit of maybe the mythology gets shared because of that, and then they kind of, you know, hug it out at the end. I think would be more in character.
So you don't want him, because you know we're on the back half, like, or we're in the final 10, right? 10 mm-hmm. episodes or so. You don't want that to be the big bad or the main villain.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's because I don't either.
It's an in the moment thing. You do it for next week and then you move on.
Okay.
Or you don't. Or you don't do it at all.
I'm 100% on board with that. That's fascinating. Okay, Samara's final words. I love you, Aram. No matter what happens, I won't let you slip away. Beautiful.
Oh.
All right. I think we covered all that. I want to say thank you guys for indulging our tears. And I'm sure you guys had your own, because that was a great episode. We want to take a second to say thank you to those of you who are supporting us by going to Patreon. That's Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. We had a blast at C2E2. And if you want to get all the details from the panel, you can do so by signing up over at the patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. The full audio version of the panel is there for you to take on the go in your podcast player. Plus, coming very shortly, a bonus episode of C2E2 after the panel. Nuggets and stories you won't want to miss. We're putting the finishing touches on that, and should be up sometime this week.
Yes. And if you want to subscribe over there and don't feel like you want to continue on with a monthly payment, you can just obviously sign up for 1 month and then just cancel after the credit card bills you the first time. So just contribute whatever you'd like, and then you can go ahead and cancel right away. You can do a one-time donation that way if you'd like to do so. But every bit of support helps, and we would definitely want to thank Doug as our official blacklister. In addition, our syndicate members, Marilyn and Lacey. Also, our task force members, Leone, Brandon, Jim, Stacy, and Florian. All these fine people get some awesome rewards, from t-shirts all the way up to their own blacklist number. You could score one of those yourself, so head on over to P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm.
Also, shout out to Kevin, Paulette, Priscilla, Isabel, Richard, Nell, James, Judy, Rachel, and Sharon for being amazing special agents for supporting us and the podcast.
That's right. We'll be back with special agent intel right after this.
Aram?
Where are you?
What are you doing? We had a plan.
I know we did.
What about what we said? You and me, you know, we're in this together.
You said it wasn't my decision to make for you, and you were right. But I need to make this decision for myself, what I need, and I need to know that you're safe.
They won't find us.
And that you're happy.
No, 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 I can't be happy without you.
I won't forget you. I may forget everything else, but I won't forget you.
Who's going to take care of you if I'm not there?
I love you, Aram. No matter what happens, I won't let you slip away.
So sad. All right, Special Agent Intel, Monica Stolfa. First off, I love the first episode. Stacey Keach was in good form, and it was great to see Jellybean sharing screen time with our favorite drunk explosive expert, Rudiger. Welcome to the Team Red, Vante. I love the heist episodes, and this one had a lot of funny moments, especially Red. This is taunting Red for once. And who else but Glenn would holler fire in a crowded theater? But I knew they were setting us up for a big blubber fest. Mojan, thank you for your interpretation of Samar. We will miss you. We all concur.
Cheryl said, all I can say is I love Aram. And wow.
I love Saram. And wow. That's over, apparently. Mahala B, terribly sad to see her go, but glad she wasn't redshirted like Mira. There are possibilities one could imagine for the character and how this wrapped up. Mojan and Amir did absolutely wonderful in both episodes. Agreed.
Nita said, what a shocker that last minutes were. I knew it, though, that only way Aram could do or try doing the impossible and unthinkable was for the love he has for Samar. Red's face when Aram got the news and was on the telephone with Samar was priceless. It was if he was emotionally going back to everything that might have happened in his past. He understood Aram's reaction, though he was a bit surprised and hurt.
Kristen Avell, could Red have been a company man? His talk with Levi seemed to hold a lot of weight to it, similar to what happened in the past with Katarina and Reddington, perhaps. The Umbrella Company is pretty high on the list to not be personal and hit close to home for Red. Agreed!
Agree 1,000%.
It's a lot. It's yes. Like more than 100%, which makes no sense, but whatever.
It's like 10 times 100%. All right, Wendy Davies, the Robert Vesco episode was a whole bucket of nonsense, and I loved it. Now, there's a party I would have liked to attend. Red Hood and his merry minions having a ball. Smokey was missing. Perhaps he was in the little boys' room. Fun episode. Then they pull the rug. So it looks like whatever Stark was doing for Red is for him personally. An Iron Man suit, possibly? I don't think. Maybe he's a brother of Stark. I don't know. So second episode, whilst could see where it was going and had an emotional impact on me since Samar's illness is close to home. My mom suffers with it, and as it progresses, it can be brutal for all involved. The one who has it, family, and friends. So I totally get why Samar chose to go away. I have to give a call out to both Amir and Mojan. They did excellent jobs. Also to the musical director. The score during their scenes heightened the moment for me. What broke me was when Aram said to Samar, who is going to care for you if I'm not there? It's time the show got more recognition in the award sector. For them to pull off two polar opposite episodes together is no mean feat. I now know that someone, please pass me a hanky. I think I got something in my eye.
Grace Normand, I've slept on it and am now ready to write my comment on the episodes. The first hour, I was honestly disappointed. It didn't feel like an under 10 episode. I totally understand that. But 5 minutes into the second episode, I knew we were going to be taken on a ride and it was going to be a gas. Samar and Aram are so underrated and I love these characters and actors so much. It was so great to see them have more screen time and Aram again prove how tough he's getting. I'll miss Samar, but I completely understand Mojan's decision and I wish her the best. There's no one I would have rather had as Samar. Hopefully Mojan can come back for the last ever episode of The Blacklist and hashtag Saram can ride off into the sunset. You know it's impactful because I haven't made a ton of really stupid jokes this entire thing.
That's right. That's right. Going to be a good ride to the end of season, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm really excited for what we have coming down the pike. And we've got more Blacklist coming. We've got, we got until the middle of May.
Yeah, May 17th. I think that weekend is the finale. And I know there's another 2-hour episode coming at the end of April. So, good stuff, good stuff.
Lots of Blacklist coming. Lots of Blacklist coming.
That's right.
But that's going to conclude this episode. So be sure to follow us on Twitter at The Blacklist GSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed when possible. And we use the show's hashtag, The Blacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or your favorite opera.
Big thanks for listening, guys. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. What illness do you think Red has?
I don't know. Not a blood disorder. It's got to be muscular.
Maybe he OD'd on testosterone.
Maybe he OD'd just ODing. That opium den's coming back. Got some nice opium from that lady.
So funny. Thanks, guys. Oh, by the way, somebody at the panel, really nice kid, asked a Red Arena question. I think his dad had that theory or something, and he asked it like nobody's ever heard that question. Everybody was very, very kind to him, but you could hear the audience go, "We've heard this one, man." We've heard this one. That's pretty funny.
It was pretty funny.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode, guys.
All right. We'll see you next week. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.